Okay, we're back. Are you still there? We're going to go to chat now, and then we're going to see if you have any questions. Okay. So, okay, everybody's there. So, you know, this idea of the pre-production, it's quite a powerful idea. And we had also talked about this in our sexual purity seminar. And then Krishna also talks about, you could say Krishna talks about pre-production in the Bhagavad Gita when he says, Dayato Vishayam Punsam. When you get to the, you, Dayato Vishayam Punsam, when you get to the point that you're contemplating sense objects. If you're already at that point, that's already a danger. That's a danger point. It's like, you know, with your physical health, there are certain signs that could be seen as danger points if you allow yourself to go so far. All right? I did this once with a tooth where probably if I would have got a filling at a certain point, if I got my tooth checked out at a certain point, it would just had a filling, but I waited, then I had to have a root canal. So I should have taken care of it. So it's like, the Dayato Vishayam Punsam means we're contemplating sense objects. Even at that point, even though it's just the beginning, it's really not the beginning. It's really much more than the beginning. It's that who contemplates sense objects? Well, you contemplate sense objects when you're not doing well in Krishna consciousness. So the fact that we're contemplating, even though it's the first stage in the progression of this verse, it's already really beyond the first stage. And so, ideally, in Krishna consciousness, you want to be in a stage where what you're contemplating is Krishna. You're not contemplating sense gratification. And so, that's the pre-production stage, where you're always keeping yourself as far as possible on the Krishna conscious side. Otherwise, when you get over the edge, then you're on the contemplation side. And then, so that's dangerous, because what's the next stage of contemplation? Dayato vishapun sangat te shubhajayate. Sangat means attachment. So one thing is contemplating sense gratification, but being attached to it, what kind of Krishna consciousness is that? How Krishna conscious can you be attached to sense gratification? So, but it's only a step away from contemplation. So that's why I'm saying contemplation is already pretty far down the road, and it is a dangerous place to be in because it's so close to attachment. And attachment is so close to lust, which is the actual act of doing what you're contemplating. So we go back to the concept of pre-production. In pre-production, you're preventing yourself from going that far in the first place. And then you're in a much safer condition, and then you understand, well, I have certain weaknesses, so I have to prevent myself from being in any way controlled or enamored or affected by those weaknesses. So you may have the weaknesses, but you're smart enough not to be in a situation that would agitate those weaknesses. It's like, you know, maybe you have a certain allergy, a certain illness. So there's certain things you just don't do, certain climates you may not go in, certain foods you may not eat, because if you do, then you'll get an allergic reaction. And just like some people are allergic to mangoes, the juice of the mango or the skin of the mango causes their skin to get rashes. So they just stay away from that. That's common sense. So I think there's certain things in the material world, excuse me, that we're all allergic to. You know, certain forms of Maya that I may be more allergic to than you are, or you may be more allergic than I am. And so we need to know what those are, because those tend to be the things that we'll contemplate. Because you really don't contemplate things that you're not attracted to, and you'll tend to contemplate the things you're most attracted to. Right? Does that make sense? So those are the things we're allergic to, and so therefore those are the things we want to keep away from us as far as possible. So if you have any questions, please ask, particularly questions that relate to your own challenges. And I'm going to read something else. This is from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the translation. There is no defeat in this material world for persons who control the mind and senses by controlling the breathing process and who are therefore experienced, mature mystics. This is because by such perfection in yoga, they have attained your mercy. So that's interesting. There's no defeat for persons who have controlled their minds. So let's read the purport. The purpose of the yogic performance is explained here. It is said that an experienced mystic attains full control of the senses and the mind by controlling the breathing process. Therefore, controlling the breathing process is not the ultimate aim of yoga. The real purpose of yogic performances is to control the mind and senses. Anyone who has such control is to be understood to be an experienced, mature yogi. Okay, listen to the next thing. I've got it underlined. It must be important if I underlined it. It is indicated herein that a yogi who has control over the mind and senses has the actual benediction of the Lord, and he has no fear. Wow, that answers your question, Carol. One who has control of the mind and senses has no fear. In other words, one cannot attain the mercy and benediction of the Supreme Lord until one is able to control the mind and the senses. Wow, let me read that again. It is indicated herein that a yogi who has control over the mind and senses has the actual mercy and benediction of the Supreme. And he has no fear. In other words, one cannot attain the mercy and benediction of the Supreme, of the Supreme Lord, until one is able to control the mind and senses. That's pretty interesting, that you can't get mercy without controlling the mind and senses. Let's read on. This is actually possible when one fully engages in Krishna consciousness. In other words, what's possible is that you can control the mind and senses. A person whose senses and mind are always engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord has no possibility of engaging in material activities. The devotees of the Lord are not defeated anywhere in the universe. It is stated Narayana Parayana or Narayana Paraha. Paraha. Narayana Paraha Sarve. One who is a Narayana Para, or a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is not afraid anywhere, whether he is sent to hell or promoted to heaven. Narayana Para Sarve Nakutasthana Bibhyati Swarga Pavarga Narakeshu Api Tuyartadam Darshan. He sees heaven and hell equally. So we understand, we know this, that we can live within this material world, but actually our consciousness can be somewhere else. It can be at Krishna's feet. Of course, you could be at Krishna's feet and your consciousness can be in the material world. So it's not where you reside physically, but it's where your consciousness resides. So this verse is talking about that. That a devotee, he really resides at the feet of Krishna. So, and because he is self-controlled, then he gets the mercy of Krishna. And even though we're reading this, I haven't read this in a long time, and we're reading it now, this is a very prominent thought in my life, that I always intuitively feel that the more I'm disciplined, the more I follow the orders of Srila Prabhupada, the more I control myself, naturally, the more mercy will come to me. Even without asking for mercy, it's just mercy comes by following the order of the Guru. And mercy comes by following the injunction of Shastra. So I always feel that. Whenever I'm tempted to get a little slack, something goes off, some voice goes off in me and says, you're not going to get mercy. And really, if you look at the life of a devotee, what makes a devotee happy is when he's getting the mercy of Guru and Krishna, then he's happy because he's advancing or she's advancing in Krishna consciousness. So she or he is happy. That's how we advance. And if we don't follow that well, then we don't get so much mercy. And we're not really happy. Certainly we're not happy when we're the mind is disturbed, when we're battling with the mind. It's quite a miserable condition to be in. To be at odds with your mind, to have your mind in control of your life. And really you could say, well, you really need mercy to do that. So it's like you need mercy to control yourself, and if you don't control yourself, you won't get mercy. So there's no way around it here. And self-control is really an essential principle. But of course what Prabhupada is making the point here is that self-control will come as a byproduct of bhakti, of engagement. So if we have a lot of time on our hands that it's not being used in Krishna's service, it's going to be more difficult to control the mind. That's what's being said here. Okay. So Carol says we can hear bhajans or Premasindhu is asking, where is this from? This is from the third canto, 15th chapter, text number 8. It is indicated herein that a yogi who has control over the mind and senses has the actual benediction of the Lord. You can't control your mind and senses if you don't have the actual benediction of the Lord. And if you do control your mind and senses, you will get the benediction of the Lord. Elsewhere it's said that Krishna says, no one can conquer me who has not conquered his senses. I was just watching a video of Prabhupada, and he was talking about lust and greed, overcoming lust and greed. And I could see when he was speaking that he had no lust and greed, and he was speaking about overcoming it from that position. You can tell when a person doesn't have a problem and they're telling other people about overcoming that problem, you can see the way it comes out of them. It's just like, this is not a big problem, it can be overcome, I'm not dealing with it, we need to overcome it. It was just the way he said it, you could see that he was living it, and therefore it had so much potency when he said it, and it kind of like dissolved everybody's lust and greed just by him saying these are gross base qualities which everyone must give up. And he's saying everyone must give it up, and he's already given it up. So it had a lot of power to it. So Edgar says, I work at a nursing home. Every resident in my unit has some stage of dementia. Their minds are permanently contaminated. They cannot think very well or control their minds for more than a few minutes. How can they become Krishna conscious? I was hoping to show them Krishna simply with love, but I'm puzzled. Just chant to them. I mean, whatever you tell them about Krishna, particularly if they hear his name and they take prasadam, it's going in there. So perhaps due to their karma, that's all they can get in this life. But if that goes in, it acts at some point. So if you could sing the Maha Mantra to them, if they'll let you, or chant softly to them, or read something to them, you say, even like Prabhupada said, you know, you touch one of our books, people are purified. You can show them the books, show them the pictures, and read something. They'll hear Krishna's name. The more they hear it, the better. Just any way you can inject. Get some holy water, put it in their water that they drink. If you can do that without, it may not be possible. But if there's any way you can give them prasadam, all these things act. Prabhupada said, many people are advanced in Krishna consciousness, and when they hear about Krishna, they'll just take to Krishna consciousness, like that. And he said, other people, they're just beginning. They've had no contact with spiritual life. So maybe for some of these people, you're the first contact they have. So whatever you can give them, it will help them in the future. At least if they take prasadam, it will guarantee they'll take birth as a human again. So there's hope. And maybe they'll get more opportunity for bhakti, for service. So I guess Prema Sen didn't hear the answer. The purport is Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15.8. So, Hare Krishna, yeah. So they hear Hare Krishna. Yeah. They may not come to any higher level of understanding. But Krishna's getting in there, and Krishna is not... And Krishna goes beyond the mental and intellectual plane, so it's directly affecting them spiritually to their eternal benefit. They cannot control their minds or senses because of illness. If they want food, they scream and cry until they get it, even though they just had dinner 10 minutes ago. Yeah. So, liberated in this lifetime, even devotee may not be liberated in this lifetime, but I mean, completely liberated, but if they take prasadam, they're becoming free from sinful reaction. If they hear the holy name, they're becoming free from sinful reaction. If you get them to say Hare Krishna, they're becoming free from sinful reaction. I mean, perhaps it's going to be in some way beneficial for them that they have this state of consciousness, because they might tell them to scream Krishna when they're screaming for dinner. Govinda, Krishna, Gauranga Nityananda, you know, get them to chant the name Gauranga Nityananda. They're more merciful, the most merciful incarnation. And certainly there'll be benefit. You know, there are different kinds of liberation. One kind of liberation is freedom from sinful reaction, so... By chanting the holy name, they'll become free from sinful reaction. And they can go further in this life and further in the next life. Like I said, people are on all levels. And, you know, we can only help people according to how much receptive they are. And how, I mean, if you can engage them in devotional service, that would be nice. So Carol's got some info on dementia. My fiancé's father had dementia, and he took care of him for several years, and he said Hare Krishna to him over and over, and had his father say it back. Yeah. So maybe if they didn't have dementia, they wouldn't say it. Like there's this story. This devotee was with his mother when she was dying. So when she was dying, he said, "Say Hare Krishna." You know, he gave her the whole mantra. And then as she was dying, instead of saying Hare Krishna, she said, "I can't say so many words," and then she died. So naturally when we hear that, we think, how unfortunate is this woman? I can't say so many words. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna is 4 syllables. I can't say so many words is 6 syllables. So perhaps these people with dementia would be more inclined to say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So that way, in that sense, perhaps they're fortunate. And you happen to be there, so something's going on there. So let's see what else. Yes, give them prasadam. Prasadam is always a potent means of purification. Anything you can do, give them contact with Krishna, perhaps they're quite open to it. So Prema Sindhu is asking, if you're controlling the mind and following the process, why does it take so long to get a taste for serving Krishna? Like chanting Hare Krishna more than 16 rounds. Why does it take a long time to get a taste? Well, there are a couple of reasons. One, the chanting may not be quality. So therefore, we may be still focused on what's going on in our life, the fears we have, the aspirations we have. We may be very self-absorbed while we're chanting. So it could be one reason. It could be because of any of the 10 offenses that we're committing while chanting. It could be just general apathy in our spiritual practice, not really taking things seriously, And at least my experience is that to the degree we take things seriously, to that degree we overcome hurdles. And every time you overcome a hurdle, there's a taste on the other side of that. And so a lot of times lack of taste is a result of lack of serious and intentional execution of devotional service. At the same time, I would say, and I will say, and it is said by those in the know, that patience is required. And a devotee, you know, a devotee's concerned that there should be taste because the devotee knows taste is symptomatic of advancement. But at the same time, the devotee's not motivated by taste, and therefore he's patient if there's no taste. And then the devotee can think, if Krishna doesn't want me to have a taste, then I'll go on without the taste. That's my service. That's a very nice position to be in. And that's usually when you get the taste, when you no longer are hankering for it. Although it's not wrong to hanker for taste if it's not motivated to enjoy Krishna, but it's motivated by the desire to be inspired by the taste to serve Krishna more. But often we don't get it when we're asking for it. We get it when we're not asking for it. So many, many devotees ask this question at Prabhupada. No. When? And why does it take so long? And Prabhupada would say, well, you have to understand, this is the easiest process. This is the direct process. And previously, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, 100,000 years, you won't even live 100 years, so it is very fast. And if you remain in Krishna consciousness, your consciousness is gradually becoming purified. And if you live another 40, 50, 60 years, you're going to notice a difference. But you may not notice it within the next year or two that much is happening. But the whole idea is you really have to stick with it, with faith that you will become purified. And always praying and hoping and desiring that some taste will be there, but always willing to accept whatever taste Krishna gives or doesn't give, and place the mood of service above that and go on. Because a lot of times a devotee will say that he or she doesn't have a taste. But a lot of times if we just invoke a more devotional attitude, then immediately there's a taste from the nature of our own consciousness. So sometimes when we say we don't have a taste, it may be that our consciousness is just dull. And so therefore we're not experiencing any taste. And then if we add some devotional consciousness to our chanting or to our practice, then taste comes. You know, what did Krishna tell the gopis? He said, I can't repay you. So you have to be satisfied with your own consciousness, with your own love. So sometimes when we say, I don't have a taste, we have to be satisfied with our own heartfelt execution of bhakti, that I'm doing my best, and I'm doing this as service, and therefore I accept whatever taste Krishna gives me or he doesn't give me. I accept that. And then we can be happy by accepting that he may not give such a great taste, but it's my honor, it's my privilege to serve him. It's my honor and privilege to chant his name. It's my great fortune that I'm able to do this, that I've been allowed or I've been given this great mercy of the Maha Mantra. So sometimes we might say, well, when I chant, I don't have any taste. But just that mere appreciation that I just described, within that there's so much taste, you see? Within the appreciation of service, there's so much taste. I'm so appreciative that I have service. So a lot of times we can invoke a taste, so to speak, by invoking a proper attitude. And sometimes the attitude is simply appreciation. That's all it is. So then Prema Sindhu says, but if you get a taste, it's easier to control the mind. Otherwise, there's a chance to be carried away. That is true. So, but it always comes back to this point. what do you do when you don't have the taste? Because when you have the taste, it's no longer really an issue. So then you don't ask the questions. There are no more questions. You are there. You've got the taste. And you're thinking of Krishna, and everything is good. So the questions really come, what do we do when we don't have the taste? Because that's where the self-discipline is so important. That's where the patience is so important. And taste can come in a seedling form also, and then gradually sprout. And so, yes, we want a taste. And if we execute bhakti well, Krishna will very quickly give a taste. Sometimes he'll give a taste immediately, and then sometimes he'll take it away, or we'll lose it because we're not executing it properly. So taste can come and go, depending on how we're executing devotional service. So that's also, it's not like, you know, until you come to the stage of ruchi, which is after nista, the taste is not going to be permanent. And before that, the taste is going to oscillate according to the condition of our bhakti and the condition of our heart. So one day you have a taste, you chanted nice rounds, you're in a good consciousness. Next day you're not, because you're anishtita, you're unsteady. So it's fluctuating. So that's why you want to become steady, nishta. And then the taste will become steady. And so the whole idea is that the higher you go up, the more there's taste. And the more there's taste, the easier it is. So before there's taste, it's always more of a struggle. It's like you're learning to do something, it's awkward. So until you get in the habit of doing it, it's difficult. But once you get in the habit of doing it, it's easier, and then perhaps you even like to do it. So that's how it works. So the real answer is patience, faith. Patience which is based in faith that I will get a taste if I remain steady. So now the clock has struck 9 o'clock. And it's time for all good men on the East Coast to go home and go to sleep. So we will end here. And one of the things that I'm thinking of doing, I don't know if we'll start next week or the week after, is bringing in God brothers and God sisters and having them speak to you about Srila Prabhupada. I thought this would be a wonderful service for them and a wonderful service for you to hear and learn about Srila Prabhupada from them, because these devotees are all rare souls and they're not going to be with us that much longer. So to be able to hear from them and immortalize it on Krishna.com would be really wonderful. So I'm going to work on that. And whenever I can't get somebody, then I'll speak about Prabhupada. Otherwise, we'll get them and they'll come and speak. So that'll be wonderful. So thank you very much. And we will see you next Tuesday night. And Hare Krishna to everyone.